morning, ladies and gentlemen. Is that okay? People can hear okay in the back? Not too loud, not too quiet, just right? I'd like to thank Ellie very much for inviting me back to give a share. It's an honor to be here. The advertising and marketing for this series were very good. A lot of people have come up to me in different places and said, I've heard about this share, so it's wonderful that there's a Harbatsat Torah increasing, and therefore, thank you, Ellie, for inviting me. I'm looking forward to the future share we're having in a few weeks. I hope to be giving a series of three, and this is the first. They're not necessarily related, they're different topics, but they all have the same basic theme, which is an application of an understanding of a meta-halachic principle, and I'll explain what I mean by that in a minute, in a contemporary context. Meaning, without getting bogged down in the specific details of halakha, although we're going to be seeing quite a few fascinating cases today, I'd like to try and zoom out a little bit. You know, sometimes, I think with Chief Rabbi Sack, it says we often look at Torah under a microscope. Sometimes we need to look at Torah with a telescope, and rather than just get into the details, look at the general principles. And Kavod HaBriyot, the idea of human dignity, is very important. And I'd like to try and show you today how Kavod HaBriyot is used, this idea of personal or human dignity, as a very important qualifier in halacha, as an overriding principle that impacts on so many different cases, on a daily basis, in business life, in personal life. We'll see some cases that make our hair stand on end. If I had any hair left, it would stand on end. Really, to see how this concept applies, I think, is going to be very enlightening just in terms of the halakhic process. There are a lot of details, and I'm going to try not to get too bogged down in the details, otherwise we'll never get out of them. But if there are any questions during the shir, I'd be very, very happy to answer them. Okay, let's start from the very beginning. Does everybody have a source sheet? Can everyone look over? Maybe you'll see if people can share. Are there any spares anywhere? Okay, if you could shuffle around the source sheets. It's not essential. It's not essential, but it's helpful. Okay. If anybody would like a copy of the source sheet afterwards, they didn't get one, I'm very happy to email it. Just get my email off Ellie, and you can get in touch with me with the greatest of pleasure. Okay, let's start off with this. The sukkah here is in the Gemara in Brachas, and he's dealing with the slightly unusual question of what happens if somebody is walking down the street and they discover that they have chatnas in their clothing. What do? Somebody comes up to you in the street and says, that's a very beautiful jacket. I bought the same jacket. I had it chatnas tested. It was a complete disaster. I had to have the whole thing removed. Did you know? And you have no idea. What do you do? So have a look at what the Gemara says in number one. Hamotzi kilayim bevigdav. If you find kilayim, chatnas, in your clothing, poshtam, you must take them off. Afilu b'shuk, even in public. Now we'll have to see what this means. And we'll talk a little bit about how this impacts on other areas of halakha. You have to take them off. My timer. What is the reason? To quote a pasuk in Mishlei, ein chokhma, ve'ein tfuna, ve'ein eitzel neged Hashem. You can't rationalize away a mitzvah. There is a mitzvah in the Torah not to wear chatnas. You can't say, well, God is not going to understand in these circumstances if I wear the chatnas because, look, it's very embarrassing, it's publicly humiliating. How can I remove my clothes in public? God will understand just this one time. No, you don't even give cover to a rab who deserves cover. Every person deserves cover, but even more so a rab in a situation where there's a chilul Hashem, here meaning a violation of a Torah mitzvah. This happens obviously on many occasions. I had a personal situation many years ago, not this situation, but I was a junior lawyer. I was a lawyer for many years in London. I was a junior lawyer and I was invited by one of the senior partners in the firm, and I'd only been working there a few months. I'd like to invite you and your wife for dinner. Not Jewish. together with some of the other juniors, I said, well, no, thank you very much. You know, I'll just have something to drink. You know, I'll maybe pick a bit of lettuce here and there. He said, no, no, no. He said, I'll make you something you can eat. I said, I don't think you will, because it's very complicated and please don't go to any bother. He says, no, nonsense. I wouldn't hear of it. You couldn't, this was sort of person you couldn't say no to. So he insisted on researching it. This was before the days of internet. I don't know, he went to the library, his wife went to the library. They looked up the laws of kashrut, and he served me there on the day, on the evening, with a plate of beautiful treif chicken, bought from a treif butcher, cooked with a cream sauce, like the whole, as if that made any difference. But he, there you are, he said, I've done the research, and I know you won't eat pork, and you won't eat shrimps, but you will eat chicken, and... So, you know, we're going to say, I'm going to lose my job. How can I not eat it? But no, of course you can't eat it. Ein chochma, ein tvuna, ein eitzleg, and I have to say to him, I'm really sorry. I'm very appreciative of your, you know, assistance and help, but I can't eat it. So me and my wife were sitting there not eating it. And I'll tell you the end of the story. It's not relevant to the shir, but it's, you couldn't make this up, and I'm not making it up. I tried to change the subject. Because, you know, I thought that was politically appropriate. So I then looked on the wall. There was a very beautiful picture of a Victorian lady, you know, a very, very floor-to-ceiling picture. So I turned around to him and said, oh, that's a nice picture. Who's that on the wall? And one of the other juniors on the other side of him started going... and I couldn't understand what was going on. And he said... And I remember this all my life. He said... That's my mother. She died this afternoon. At this point, I mean, there's nothing you can say, really, is there? I said, well, you know, you could have cancelled the dinner. You know, it's not. You know, she said, no, the show must go on, and all that. Anyway. So that was the rather disastrous beginning to my legal career, which I'm pleased to say got better after that. But ein kachma, the ein tfuna, the ein eisle egad Hashem. What can you do? You can't rationalize away an issue. The Gemara is not happy with this answer. It says, is that right? Tashma, second line, and this is where we get into the sukkah. Gon kavod habrias, is that right? Surely kavod habrias, which we're going to define soon, public embarrassment of an individual, is so important, doesn't that push off Torah mitzvahs? Surely you don't have to be publicly embarrassed rather than break a mitzvah. You break the mitzvah, you're not embarrassed. Va'amai, why would this be? Lema, why don't we say, ein chochma ve'ein tzvuna ve'ein eitzel neged Hashem? So Tirgum Rav, Bar Shva, Kameda Rav Kahana, so the Gemara explains that this particular concept of God or Kavod Habrias applies with which Issa, which with Torah Mitzvah, the lab of the Loit Sosa, the lab of Lotasur, the lab of rabbinic mitzvahs. Every rabbinic mitzvah is hinged on the Torah Mitzvah of Lotasur, where it says you may not deviate from what the rabbi told us to do, says the Gemara. Kol mili de rabbonon, everything which is rabbinic in the Jewish halakhic system, as machinu alab de Lotasur, is based, relies for its validity and force on the law of Lotasur, which is the mitzvah in the Torah. And because of kavod to an individual, the rabbis permit it. Meaning, you can't break a Torah mitzvah in order to avoid public embarrassment, but you can, says the Gemara, break a rabbinic mitzvah. And we'll see some really interesting applications of that coming up very soon. So then the Gemara goes on. Let's look in the third paragraph here. Tashma, let's build this up. It's a bit complicated, but if we get this clear at the beginning, it will make a lot of sense. So then the Gemara gives another challenge. Really? Is it true that you cannot push off a mitzvah for public indignity? The Hitaramta Mehem, in the mitzvah of lost property, it uses an unusual expression. It says, when you find lost property, sometimes you must ignore it. You must pretend that you didn't see it, which seems to be the opposite of the mitzvah. Says the Gemara, Pamam Sha'ata Mitalem Mehem. Sometimes you have to ignore the property. Sometimes you have to pick it up and give it back. Okay, so how does that work? If you are a Kohen, and you have to go into a cemetery to get to the property, or if you're an older person or a more distinguished person, and this is what we're focusing on here, and it's not dignified for you. Let's say you see somebody's lost wallet underneath a truck, underneath something in the road, and you have to crawl on your hands and knees and get oil dribbled all over your face in order to return the lost property, says the Gemara here. Which I'm not getting into now, which is it'll cost you more to get it back to them than it's worth. That's why it says, you're allowed to ignore it. So the Gemara says, am I? Why? Surely not, it's a Torah mitzvah. Why don't you turn around and say, well, who are you to say that you're too dignified to return lost property just because you're an elder statesman of the community? Says the Gemara, Isura Mimamoina Loyalpino. No, it's different. This is an issue of mamanut, of money. When it comes to monetary law, in some areas, the halacha allows you not to return the lost property because of the public dignity. But that seems to be an exception, and we'll see why that is too. And the last exception, which is important, which we'll see right now, in the fourth paragraph, Tashma, says the Gemara, here's another exception. Ula achoisa. This is talking about the nazir. A nazir is like a kohen gadol. He is not allowed to become tamei meis, even for his closest relatives. So says the Torah there in the Pasha of Nazir, a Nazir cannot be matame himself or herself, which would happen in Zirah, for a mate, even for any relative. And it lists them, not for his father or his mother or his brother or his sister, etc. So the Gemara wants to know, why does he keep listing them? Because I know, he told me nobody, I understand nobody, so why are you telling me all the specifics of nobody? So he says, what is the Torah telling us? Let's say the Nazir was on his way to shecht his Korban Pesach, which is very important. It's the only positive mitzvah, one of the only ones which has a chiyuv kores, if you don't do it. Ulamul et bono, and he's also going to do a bris milah on his son, which is another mitzvah, which is a positive mitzvah where there's a kores if you don't do it. Ushama, then he hears shemes lo meis, that there is a dead body that needs taking care of. And there's every reason for this person to say, not me, I'm not getting involved. I'm a Nazir, I'm on my way to shecht the Korban Pesach, I'm on my way to do a bris milah, surely someone else can deal with it, says the Gemara. Yachol, he might have thought, k'shem she'enu matame lahem, just like he doesn't have to become tame for his relatives. Kach enu matame l'meis mitzvah, so too he can ignore a body with nobody to bury it. Talmud Lamed says, no, la'achoysa, it's for his family that he doesn't become tame, for his sister. But for a meis mitzvah, he has to even override the fact that he's a nazir, the fact that he's on his way to shecht the Korban Pesach, etc. Amai says the Gemara, why is that? Lema, surely we say, ein chokmah ve'ein tefillah ve'ein eitzah le'neged Hashem. You can't rationalize away mitzvahs. Says the Gemara, shev ve'al taseh shani. What's shev ve'al taseh? Which means the passive breach of a positive mitzvah is different, even though it's a Torah mitzvah. Meaning, you don't have to shecht your Korban Pesach, and you don't have to do the bris milah, because looking after the meis mitzvah is more important. It overrides even a Torah mitzvah on a passive level. Okay? Now, what have we seen so far? This is very important to get this clear, because it will make all the other cases come together. As a basic first principle, the Gemara said, you cannot override mitzvahs for public indignity, or kavod habris. But it gives three exceptions. Exception number one, rabbinic laws. The rabbis, and we'll see why later, made a general exception and said, if it's only a rabbinic prohibition, you can override it for public indignity. And we'll give examples in a minute. Number two, if it's an issue of monetary law as opposed to ritual law, like lost property, under certain circumstances, you can override the Torah mitzvah for public indignity. And number three, even if it's a Torah law, even if you're breaching the Torah law, you're not shechting your Korban Pesach, and you're not doing your bris milah, the Torah will allow you not to do that mitzvah in order to preserve public indignity. In this case, the burying of a body who has no one else to bury them. Baruch Hashem, we don't deal with the case of meis mitzvah very often, but it does come up occasionally. I was once, just as an interesting anecdote, I'll try to keep the anecdote short because I've got a lot to get through, but I was once called when I was at lunch with my wife and some friends by a friend who was very distressed. She said her grandmother had passed away and she didn't know there was going to be a minion at the funeral. So she asked us if we could just drop everything and run to the funeral. Anyway, we went to the Levaya and thank God there was a nice crowd there. There were 40, 50 people, etc. It was very nice. And as my friend and I were leaving, we said, well, it was very nice we came, but, you know, they didn't need us in the end, and you know, we left our families, and we didn't really need to come. And as we were walking out
of the cemetery, a man came running over to us and said, there's someone being buried here who has no relatives, who has no friends, and we need a minion for his funeral. And the only person who's here is his lawyer. The ultimate indignity on a certain level. So we went, and as my friend and I walked there, we said, oh, this is a mate's mitzvah. This is somebody who really has nobody else to deal with them, and we are able to be there. So we went to this funeral, buried Shem Shemayim, and we felt very pleased with ourselves. And at the end, the lawyer stood up and said, thank you very much for coming. We've had a minion. It was very nice of you. I'd like to read a letter that my client wrote to be read out at his funeral to the 10 men who came to his funeral. And I turned around to my friend and said, this guy was a multi-billionaire, and he left everything to the 10 men that came to his funeral. I said, I beg you, it has to be. Anyway, it wasn't, but which is why I stand before you now, as opposed to be somewhere else. But at least we got the opportunity to be involved with a Meis Mitzvah, and that does apply sometimes. Now, Kavod HaBriyos, therefore, overrides halacha, it seems, in three categories: rabbinic laws, monetary laws, and occasionally even overriding a Torah law. Now, passively. Now, you might ask yourself, one second, the Nazir is not just not shekeling his korban paper, but he's also breaking his nazirut. That's a negative prohibition. That's not just a passive breach of a positive prohibition. He's actively breaching his nazirut. And therefore, Tosfos comes along in number three and says, you know something, Kavod HaBriyos goes even further. Its tentacles creep out even to other areas. Elanira, says Tosfos, Shemi Nazir Logam Rinam, we can't actually learn from Nazir. Nazir is also an exception. The Mala Nazir Shekhen Yeshu Mashela, it's not quite as strong as a regular negative prohibition, because you can always get out of being a Nazir. How do you get out of being a Nazir? You do have Taras Nadarim. So even, and I'm not getting into all the details, even in the realm of negative mitzvahs, Kavod HaBriyos begins to start making inroads in certain exceptional cases. It's such a strong principle. And the actual version of the Yerushalmi, if you look here in the Yerushalmi number 4, is even stronger. Is afilu b'tumah, even when it comes to tumah, breach of a negative prohibition of tumah, shehu midvar Torah, which is on a Torah level. Okay, mimanda amar Rabbi Zera, God covered a bria shedoichel a mitzvah b'loy saaser b'sha'achat. Meaning, the Rishonim has a version that covered a bria is so strong it might even breach a Torah negative mitzvah even on a temporary basis, which most of the poskim don't go that way. But Kavod HaBriyos clearly is expanding into all sorts of areas, not just rabbinic law, but passive breach of Torah law, and maybe even breach of certain negative mitzvahs. There's an interesting mitzvah in the Rambam, halacha in the Rambam. What happens if a person is in the middle of having a shave, and they receive news that a close relative has just passed away? In the middle of having the shave, and half their beard is on, and half their beard is off. Interesting case, huh? And the shaila is, and the Rambam holds that on the day that a person hears that there's actually a Torah prohibition to shave, are you allowed to shave the rest of the beard off because of Kavod HaBriyos? And it's interesting, actually, the Rambam there says, yes, you are. And they're trying to work out, what? How can this work? This is a breach of a negative mitzvah for the Rambam. Kavod HaBriyos, we only saw rabbinic mitzvahs, positive mitzvahs, monetary mitzvahs, and yet you see in other areas it begins to actually extend even further. Let's see how what the Shulchan Aruch does with this, and we'll start to talk about some practical cases. Have a look, please, at source number 5. Says the Shulchan Aruch as follows: Haroi kilayim shel Torah al chaveru. If you walk down the street and you see your friend wearing shatnas, you know it is, and they don't know it. Says the Shulchan Aruch, he rules this halacha. Afilu hayam halach b'shuk, even if they're walking in public, hayakayfei slow, you can jump on them, okay? Bakayra, and rip it off them, miyad. By the way, ask a shayla maybe before you do this. I want to just add on a serious note, I'm not paskining any shaylas. I'm not a posik, and I'm not here to give halacha lamaita. But the Shulchan Aruch says, in principle, if you see someone wearing shatnas in the street, you don't mess around, you rip it off. I feel a higher rabbi, even if it's your rab. The in higher should be Braham, and here's the application of what we saw. If it's shatnas on a rabbinic level, and of course one has to know one's halacha, the shatnas d'oraisa and the shatnas d'rabbanan. I'm not getting into exactly the difference between them. If you see that they're only wearing shatnas on a rabbinic level, ain't you don't tear it me'alav. They ain't poshta b'shuk, and they don't have to take it off in public. Wait till they get home. Why? Because of Kavod HaBrios. Because it's a rabbinic prohibition. They're wearing shatters on a rabbinic level. You don't have to tear it off them. They don't have to tear it off themselves. They can wait till they go home and they can take it off in a more mechubad way. The same would be true, for example, of... Yes?
But how practical is this? How could one determine that without an analysis?
No, as I said, I gave an example. You see them wearing the exact shirt or the exact coat or the exact jacket that you just bought, and you took it to shatters testing and they told you it was a disaster, and the person says, I have no idea, I never thought of testing it. Could happen. You don't have to carry a lab around with you. I'll tell you another example where it could happen. What happens if a person is wearing tzitzis on Shabbos in a place where there's no Eruv? Okay? So in the old days, back in the day, the tzitzis wasn't just the talit gadol that they wore on top, but the tzitzis were on the actual clothing. So what happens if you're walking through a public area, Rishut HaRabim, on Shabbat, and you realize that one of your tzitzis is ripped off? So now you have three tzitzis, which is not achieving any mitzvah whatsoever, and in fact, not only that, but you are now considered to be carrying the tzitzis on the other three parts of your garment because they could be used later, and that's not doing the mitzvah. Have a look in source number 6, please. In Noide Loiba Shabbat, okay, if you find out on Shabbat that your tzitzis have torn, Kishuhuba Karamalit, when you're in a karamalit, which is in a rabbinic prohibition, not a Torah prohibition to carry. Shehatalis she'alav pasul, you found that your talis is pasul. Lo yisirin, you don't have to take it off, me'alav. Actually, gila beis is the same alopa. You can wait till you get home. Why? Again, the gadol kavod habrias. Because taking off that clothing in public is embarrassing. It's not a Torah prohibition, it's a rabbinic prohibition. And you're allowed to wear those clothing with the tzitzis carrying on Shabbos because it's a rabbinic prohibition. Another example of where the rabbis allowed this. Now look what it says at the end. It says the Ramah v'dak of a Shabbos, but that's only on Shabbos. De'asta la'asoy tzitzis, when you're not allowed to wear tzitzis. Aval b'chol kehai gavna osa, when you're not allowed to tie tzitzis. But on a weekday, you would have to take it off. Now what's going on here? Let me explain. For technical reasons, which I'm not getting into, making tzitzis on Shabbos is prohibited. I'm sure you can work it out with the knots and everything. And therefore, wearing something which is technically pasul, three tzitzis on it, for example, is only an issur rabbanan. So that's why you can take it off on Shabbat. But where on a weekday, where wearing tzitzis, making tzitzis is allowed, there would be a Torah prohibition, says the Ramah, to be walking around with pasul tzitzis. So it says kavod habrios is not enough. Why not? Didn't we just say that even for a Torah mitzvah, a passive breach of a positive Torah mitzvah, you're allowed to breach it because of kavod habrios? So there, and I just want to point out to you that the Mishnah Berurah goes into an analysis, well, it depends. And this is important. How serious is the indignity? And we're going to have to talk a bit about this. What is kavod habrios? Is it anyone who just feels embarrassed for whatever reason? We'll give lots of examples coming up soon. Or are there some objective criteria? And he says, look, for the breach of a rabbinic prohibition, that's on a relatively lower level, and therefore, even a lower level of kavod habrios of indignity is allows it. For a breach of a Torah prohibition, even a passive breach of a positive mitzvah, like wearing tzitzis, you need to get a higher level. And he goes through a whole different levels of distinctions between this kind and that kind of kavod habrios, which I'm not going to get into now. But you see here that we're trying to balance, on the one hand, how serious a breach of Torah is a person transgressing, rabbinic Torah, etc., and how much is the kavod habrios. And this is a scale which we take very seriously. Let's just have a look now on page 2 at this topic that we're asking about, what is indeed indignity and what is not. The issue of Jews and non-Jews is very interesting, we'll come back to later. Do we say that kavod habrios is a specific issue relating to Jewish people? Or does it relate to the human being as a human condition? Now it's very interesting, it seems from the Rambam that it's a human condition. It's nothing to do with being Jewish. All human beings have kavod. Why? Because human beings are made with Tzelem Elokim, and we'll get back to that at the end. And it's very, it seems from the Rambam, look at number 9 just for a second before we talk about indignity in specifics. The Rambam is talking about a dayan and what a dayan has to take into consideration when they're judging a case. And he says, Kol Elu Advarim, all of these issues that the dayan is looking at, the Thimasha Yira HaDayan is according to how he analyzes them and sees them. Shezer Roy Lekach, okay, what is suitable in the case. Vashashat Srikam, what the times require.
Ubechol, and in any event, says the Rambam, Yihu Masav L'Shem Shamayim, the Dayan must always act L'Shem Shamayim, Va'al Yiyeh Kavod, Kavod Abriyot Kal Ba'inav. Let him never forget how important the human dignity is of the people before him. Shehar Hudoche Et Lot HaSeh Shal Divrayim, because he pushes off a rabbinic mitzvah. V'kol Shekein, and even more so, Kvoid B'nei Avram Yitzchak V'Yakov, HaMachzikim B'Torah Ha'Mitzvah. All the more so, Jewish people. So, it's clearly applicable, says the Rambam, to all people. It's not just an issue of dealing with Jews in a certain way, it's dealing with all human beings with the concept of Kavod Abriyot. Now, where does this come from? And what does it relate to? So we've seen about Shatnas and clothing. There seems to be a clothing connection. Wearing Shatnas or wearing tzitzit and taking his clothing off. Where did that come from? So I want to suggest if you look down at the bottom of page 2, there's clearly a link between the old concepts of dignity, kavod, and clothing. Think about Adam and Chava in Gan Eden and the idea of the clothing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes for them to preserve their dignity. Think about the clothes of the Kohanim, the Bigdei Kehuna, where it says L'chavod u'letifaret. Think about the mitzvah of Kavod Shabbat, which is specifically related to the clothing that we wear. Kavod obviously relates to clothing in a significant way. We also talk about it in relation to the Mace Mitzvah and the burial of a dead body. And also we'll see the poskim talk about the issue of a personal hygiene, and we'll see examples below as to how that comes into the issue of Kavod Abriyos. There are situations that a person will talk about people being locked in the bathroom on Shabbat. People being stuck in the bathroom without any tissues and all that kind of stuff, where Kavod Habriyos comes into play. We'll see how the halacha applies that in a very sensitive way. Let's have a look at something else. Please turn over to page 3, and I want to show you how we move forward with this.
In a couple of things. Yeah. You said clothing and Shabbat.
Yes.
Where do you get a source for clothing and Shabbat?
On a Rabbana level, it's a deposit from Yeshaya. It's in between. The idea of Kavod Shabbat, because Chazal talk about Kavod Shabbat specifically, there's a few things that they talk about. One of the key issues they talk about is how we dress on Shabbat. He talks about in Perik 58 there. He talks about the issues of Mitzvah Chetzach, Davar, all of the mitzvahs, Oynei Shabbat and Kavod Shabbat, etc. He just mentioned the context of Kavod. Chazal later put the clothing into this issue of Kavod and make that connection. Fine. Yes?
The issue of clothing has to do with the issue of hiding.
Of hiding, interesting.
Adam and Eve, yes. They choose to do an avera. They had two choices.
Right.
They choose to do an avera.
Okay.
And then they decide they want to hide.
Mm-hmm.
The sin.
Mm-hmm.
So, the nature of the clothing, which is a garment of hiddenness,
right?
How does that really?
So, how do you choose
consciously,
right,
to do the avera?
It's interesting because I'm focusing on the clothes that God makes for them afterwards. Meaning, they make their own clothes to hide, but then God makes clothes for them. Why not to hide? But for covet, because he said, now it's not appropriate that you're walking around in public. What changed exactly between before the sin and after the sin is a very interesting question as to why they were suddenly felt naked afterwards and they didn't feel naked before. But don't forget there's two sets of clothes. There's the clothes that they make and there's the clothes that God makes. And we'll see at the end, that's one of the origins, one of the sources of covet ever is. Okay, fine, let's just go on a little bit. There are degrees of indignity. And there are some situations that the poskim have talked about. We talked about the objective nature of clothing. Not every item of public embarrassment is necessarily going to be considered to be covered. Now, really, what if somebody is embarrassed to put on their tefillin in public in the airport? They'd rather not put on tefillin than be seen wearing tefillin. They say, no, that's not an issue of covered abrius. You're just going to get over that and get some be mitchazek and put on the tefillin. That's not an issue. There are other issues. For example, there was a shaila raised as to whether they're allowed to play music in shul on the day that the Tsar was crowned. And they asked, everybody's playing music, should we allow playing music in shul to celebrate the coronation of the Tsar? Maybe God will kavod habrias. The kavod for the Tsar should override the rabbinic prohibition on playing music on Shabbos. And that was ruled, and they said no, leaving aside the political issues of the Tsar and whether they wanted to celebrate or not wanted to celebrate. But they said no, that's not called kavod habrias. Kavod habrias is avoiding a negative situation rather than giving kavod in a positive way. And we'll see that's how it's usually defined. I want to look now at the Ramah in number 13, which will open up the sugya in the most fascinating way. Have a look in number 13. The Ramah adds an interesting addition. Look at number 13. Haroya kilayim shel teresha al chaveru. We saw this already a little bit. Someone who sees their friend wearing Shabbos. Even walking in the Shuk, you have to jump on them and tear it off them immediately. We saw that before. But even his rabbi, says the Ramah, what happens if the person who's wearing it doesn't realize? They didn't know. Do you have to tell them? You don't have to tell them in the shuk. The mishum kavod avriyas hishtok. You can keep quiet. Why? What's your mitzvah to tell other people if they're doing an avira? What's your mitzvah? Okay, it's a mitzvah of tzolchacha. Meaning, my mitzvah is a positive mitzvah, Torah mitzvah, to tell other people in the situation where they're doing an avira. But kavod avriyas, whereas it might not allow them to wear the shatnas in public, but it will allow me not to tell them because my obligation is positive and Kavod Abrius will override that. And this has some very interesting applications. For example, the Ramah asks in number 14, what happens if a Kohen is asleep in a building without any clothes on? They say he's not wearing any pajamas, then somebody dies in the building. Do you have to tell the Kohen someone's died in the building? Because if you tell the Kohen someone's died in the building, what will the Kohen need to do?
Yeah.
Run outside. Okay, so he can't wait to put his pajamas on. You can't be in a building. I'm sorry that the shiur seems to have a clothing and death theme. It's not. It wasn't intended that way, but these shailas come up. So the Ramah passes. No, you don't have to tell him exactly what's going. You just say, "Can you get up and come outside and talk to us?" And he'll get up and he won't know. And he'll put his clothes on and he'll come outside. And then you'll tell why. Because again, Kavod Avriyas will override my obligation to tell people in that situation because it's a positive mitzvah. Let me give you two fascinating applications of that. The Node of Yehuda was asked the following shaila. And if you think these things only happen today, you'll see what happened with the Node of Yehuda. He lived in the early 19th century. There was a young man, a bocher, who was living with a frum family as a yeshiva guy. And he lived with the family for many years and he grew so very close to them. And in the end, he got married to the daughter, made a shidduch, got married to the daughter. And they went on that in that way. And then it later transpired, the child was asked of the Nebi Yehuda, that while the son was still single, while the man, the bocher, was still single, he'd actually had an affair with the wife of the family that he was living with. You think these things only happen today? They don't only happen today. So listen, the Nebi Yehuda was asked the following question. He now wants to do tshuva, the boy. And he has to obviously deal with his own relationship with his wife, which is the daughter, okay? That's one thing. But he wants to know, do I have to tell the father? Because they're married, and he has no idea. The mother knows, and she's not saying anything. But does he have to tell the father? Because the father has a Torah command to separate from the wife. Because she had a conscious extramarital affair.
Why did the mother tell her?
Because the mother doesn't want the mother feels guilty, she's not going to say anything. And the son asked the Node of Yehuda, do I have a mitzvah? Do I have an obligation to tell this? Or can I leave the man in a situation of ignorance because of the Kavod Habrius angle? Because if this gets out, it's going to be devastating to him, devastating to the family, devastating on many levels. And does he deserve that? Does my mitzvah tochacha warrant putting him in that situation? And he has a whole analysis there of what to do. And in a modern day scenario, here's the case from Rav Avadi Yosef. Rav Avadi Yosef was asked the following shaila. There was a young woman who, you can look at the tshuva itself, there's a young woman who got married. Nice young from woman, married a nice young from boy. She got pregnant, she had a little boy. Everyone's over the moon because it's a pidyon haben. And how often do you get to make a pidyon haben? And the son is delighted and he gets to make a pidyon haben. It's wonderful. But the daughter knows something, the wife knows something, that the husband doesn't know. Which is that before they got married, many, many years earlier, she went through a bit of a wild phase, and she went off the rails a little bit, and she ended up becoming pregnant, and she had an abortion. And she became Baal Tshuva, she came back on, everything's happy. For whatever reason, this never came out in the Shidduch inquiries, and I'm not getting into whether it should have done or it shouldn't have done. But she knows that there is no opinion of it. Because this is not the first child. And he doesn't know that. And if he finds that out, you can imagine what the consequences will be. And again, the shaila is, this issue, and when you're talking in abstract terms of people walking in the shuk and tearing off shatnas, it seems terribly theoretical, and how could that ever happen? And people with tzitzis on Shabbat, but actually when it comes to it, at the coalface, as they say, Rav Avadi is dealing here with exactly this issue of Kavodah Brit. Is her mitzvah of Tochacha to tell the husband that he's going to do a Pidyon Haben, and he's going to make a bracha on the Batola, which, by the way, for Rav Avadia, is a very serious business. For the Sfaradi, the Psak of a bracha on the Batola is breaking one of the Ten Commandments. Does she have to tell him, or can she stay shtum? And what did he say? Shtum. Because her mitzvah is a positive mitzvah, a Torah mitzvah, but it's overridden by the mitzvah of Kavod Abrius, so strong is Kavod Abrius, that we let the husband make the pidyon haben, we let him make the bracha, and we keep him in blissful ignorance for the rest of his life. Yes. You're just underlying the whole point. Kavod Abrius is so fundamental that it's an interesting question you're asking. 2,000 years later, we're still focused on the death of Rabbi Akiva's students. After all that's happened, after so many disasters and tachbatach, and after the Holocaust, after everything, we're still focusing on Rabbi Akiva. Just underline the point that you're making, which is that Kavod Habrius is so important that it actually undermined the whole reflowering of Rabbi Akiva's Torah. Remember the historical context. I'm glad you raised the point of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is the great hope after the disaster of Beit Hillel Beit Shammai. I digress for a minute, but since you asked, I'll mention it. Beit Hillel Beit Shammai was a disaster for the Jewish people. This is more Rabbi Wein's field than mine, but I'll mention it in terms of a history. But Beit Hillel Beit Shammai was pulling the Jewish people apart. Na'aseh Torah k'shtei Toras. Rabbi Akiva represented the fusion of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, and in that sense represents a new beginning. And he produced this academy, which healed that rift. And then what happens? Lo nahagu kavod zevazeh, and the whole thing fell apart. This is not just the tragic death of 24,000 Talmidim. This is the premature ending of the whole new beginning of Torah. And the Bar Kokhba revolt, etc., etc. So that's why it's so critical. One of the Rabbonim in Harnoff was saying the other week that people get very focused at this time of year on, do I have to listen to music and this and that. These are all interesting questions, but why is no one saying, well, let's learn Hilchos Bein Adam L'Chaveiro or the laws of Lashon Hara at this time of year? Because surely that is much more important in many ways as a tikkun, because we're still focused on that. And this just underlines the point. Absolutely, Kavod Habrius. Absolutely central. Let's look at some practical issues. Have a look, please, on page number 3. Where does this enter into this meta-halachic principle? Where does this come into our daily halachic life? A few areas. First of all, as I'm sure people are aware, if somebody is stuck in the bathroom, excuse me for mentioning the case, and there's no tissue paper, what are they meant to do? They're meant to sit there for the rest of Shabbat. They're meant to just, you know, keep quiet, scream for help. That's not appropriate in many situations. Kavod Habrius, they will be allowed, says the halacha, to tear a normal toilet roll, tear a normal bathroom paper in a way which will be with a shinum. Ah, drabonon, you can't do drabons on Shabbos, you can't walk around turning on the lights with your elbows. You go on Facebook with your elbows, you do all your... No. Kavod Habrius. Kavod Habrius overrides, the classic example of Kavod Habrius overriding a rabbinic prohibition. The Chazal talk in many ways about moving mufsa on Shabbos for personal hygiene reasons. Refuah. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was asked an interesting question. I'm sure it's well known that there is a rabbinic prohibition on refuah on Shabbos. If a person has a minor ailment, obviously if a person has something more serious, they have a real illness, even if it's not life-threatening, they can certainly take medication. But if a person has a minor illness, a bit of a sore throat, a minor headache, something like that, then there are halachic rabbinic prohibitions of refuah on Shabbos. So Rav Shlomo Zalman is asked, what about someone who has very bad breath? And it's very publicly embarrassing. Or a cold which is, their nose is running all the time and it's publicly embarrassing. Are they allowed to take medication, even though this is not a serious illness, this is not something which would normally warrant the breaking of a rabbinic prohibition, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, absolutely. Kavod Habrius. If you can't function in public, if you can't move around with other people, God will Kavod Habrius Shadoi Kalaisa Sabateri, in this case the rabbinic prohibition of taking refuah on Shabbos. Look at this case in the Ramah, in number 15. This is absolutely classic. Back in the day, people used to get married very young. Some people feel people still get married very young, but I'm talking about 12, 13, 14. And there was also a minute in Eastern Europe that weddings used to happen on a Friday afternoon. Why did they make their weddings on a Friday afternoon? Shalom. Also, because they had no money, saved money, they had one cow in the town. I remember Rabbi Wein many years ago at a shir that I was there. He said his father was a rav back in Europe, back in the day. He says he used to sit there all Thursday nights with the shochet looking at the one sad, sick old cow, finding some way to find a halachic heter to declare it kosher so that the village would have what to eat on Shabbos. They certainly didn't have enough money to have fleishiks during Shabbos and shed fleishiks for a wedding as well. So they made the wedding Friday afternoon and they made the Seudas Mitzvah on Friday night. By the way, just an interesting aside, Shulchan Aruch says that if you make your wedding or mitzvah, your celebration on Friday night on Shabbos, you're allowed to have live music with a non-Jewish band. I don't think you could get away with that today. But it's so important, this Simchas Kosson B'Kala, that live music at the wedding is even overrides that. That's a separate issue. What happened? So here's the story. And this is a well-known story, and it's written up, and people wrote to the Ramor afterwards. The Ramor of Moshe Islis in Krakow, he was faced with a young bride and groom, very young people, and Friday afternoon, they're ready for the chuppah, everything's prepared, everyone's excited, they're walking down towards the chuppah, and then one of the families starts talking to the other side, the machatonim, about money. Like, yeah, it's great that we agreed that you would give X. And they said, we never said we'd give X. No, we're not going to give that, we're going to give Y. So, no, excuse me, that's not what we agreed. And before you look round, everybody's screaming and shouting, and the whole wedding is on hold. The Ramah said, this is not acceptable. He took the family to one side. He said, ladies and gentlemen, there'll be a short hiatus while we deal with a few personal issues. He spoke with the machatonim inside, and they worked it out. Baruch Hashem, everyone's happy. It took them a while. They came out, and they said, let's do the wedding. And then somebody turned around and said, Shabbos. Too late. Look, Shabbos, even according to Rabbi Matan, everybody. It's the stars are twinkling, and it's Shabbos. And you're not allowed to have a wedding on Shabbos. Everybody knows that. Why are you not allowed to have a wedding on Shabbos? No, not the glass. You don't have to break the glass.
The kinyan.
You're not allowed to make a kinyan on Shabbat. A wedding is a kinyan. It's not that anyone's buying anybody else. It's that there's a change of status going on with the chatan and the kala. And making a kinyan on Shabbat is very clear in the Gemara. It's asur. Weddings are asur on Shabbat. The Gemara is unequivocal. There's no minority opinion that permits it. So they said, okay, so we can't do the wedding now, it's too late, it's Shabbos, we'll do the wedding after Shabbos. So the Ramah stepped in and said, no, we'll do the wedding right now. Wedding on Shabbos? So you can't do a wedding on Shabbos. I mean, they can't tell him, you know, it says in the Shulchan Aruch, because he can say, I wrote the Shulchan Aruch. So that they can't do, but they can say to him, you know, it says in the Gemara that you can't, and he said, excuse me, God will cover Habriyas. You're going to leave this young bride, this young Kala, she probably was 12 years old, and a young Chatan, you're going to leave them on Shpilkas, the whole of Shabbos, waiting to see what the family's going to fall out about next? By Motzei Shabbos, they won't even be talking to each other. Says the Ramah, we're doing the wedding right here on Shabbos. And Kovat Abrius is going to override the rabbinic prohibition of performing a wedding on Shabbos, very publicly. And you should know the Ramah got into a lot of hot water over this. People wrote to him. People said to him, how can you do this? We've heard this is happening. You know, what is this? They're breaking with halacha on the phone. He said, no, God will cover Habriyas. And even so far that he writes it into the Shulchan Aruch afterwards. Just to show that he didn't have any regrets. In number 15, he writes, it says, Ein Makatshin, the Shulchan Aruch writes, you're not allowed to have a wedding. And he says that he brings the exception if on Friday afternoon things run late and there's a covered Habriyas angle. He says that you are allowed to do the wedding and make the suddah, etc., etc. You should try to avoid it if you can. But he says that is an example of kavod. It's a very beautiful public example of kavod. Yes.
My name is
Catherine.
Just recently, about a topic.
Really?
Yeah. And I
wanted
to
She was not Jewish. Interesting.
Very common in our community.
Okay. Yes.
The young man thought he was a Cohen.
Okay.
And he said, you know, what's your name is Cohen, that's your name. And he discovered he was a halal.
Oh, he discovered he was a halal, and she discovered she was not Jewish. Gosh, a bunch of discovery. Yes. Right. because you know it's a halal is someone who comes from a family that had kohuna, they were kohanim, but somewhere back in the line they've married a woman that they're not allowed to marry, maybe a divorced woman or a convert or a grusha, etc. And then the children become halalim. So a halal is allowed to marry a. Absolutely. So yeah, there are the famous stories of Rav Moshe under the chuppah where the mother says that the child is a mamzer and he says he ignores her. All sorts of interesting things. Let us go a little bit further.
Well,
he said it's a rabbinic prohibition. It says it's overridden because of Kavod HaBrias. Because Kavod HaBrias means leaving the kala and the chosim. Okay, let's just move on a little bit. Just go over the page to page 4. And let's have a look at some other possible examples. There are issues of allowing people who are disabled to get out and about in electric wheelchairs under certain circumstances because of Kavod HaBriot. Now today we have places like Somet that design things especially for people in these situations so that they don't have to break any Shabbos prohibitions, but even in a situation where someone might have to, then there are Kavod HaBriot issues. An interesting example of allowing a young man who's gone prematurely gray to dye his hair in the event that that's prohibited or if it's a rabbinic prohibition, I'm not getting into the whole discussion now, that might be allowed for Kavod HaBriot. A classic example, someone who's a shliach tzibur who suddenly feels that they need to use the bathroom. And it's there's a whole shul of people waiting for musaf. Of course, in the halacha, you're not allowed to daven if you need to use the bathroom. So, does the shliach tzibur have to stop in the middle and go out and come back, etc.? Under certain circumstances, then again, God will cover the breath. The personal dignity of the shliach tzibur may override that prohibition under certain situations. I brought you two question mark cases. What about shaking hands? People often talk about that. Shomer Negiah, everyone's favorite topic. Certainly, I teach usually in seminaries, that's everybody's favorite topic. Is a person allowed to shake hands with somebody else?
Would be offended.
Correct.
And there's no problem.
Right, so I'm not passing any shilas, and there are many people. My masora personally on these issues in halacha is that even if it's not an issue of kavod HaBriot, if it's in a business-like scenario and a woman puts out a hand, then you shake the hand, and that's not a problem. That's what my rabbeim do, and that's what I do too. But in the situation of kavod HaBriot, could you turn around and say that God will kavod HaBriot? It overrides any prohibition here of Shomer Negiah because I'm going to embarrass the person. So that's a good question. And you have to get into the whole question of what is the Issa of Shomer Negiah? Is it an Issa min HaTorah or is it an Issa midrabanan? If it's an Issa midrabanan, then you can start talking about kavod HaBriot. If it's an Issa min HaTorah, will it help you? It's a bit like the case of Jeremy, my senior partner, putting the chicken in front of me and saying to me, you know, you're going to embarrass me if you don't eat the chicken. Without getting into a whole analysis of Shomer Negiah, it might be relevant, but only if it's Drabanan. And it might not be relevant at all, because if it's a business scenario, then who needs the heter of Kavod HaBriot, because you'd be allowed to shake the hand anyway. But this is a question that comes up. Another much more controversial question has been raised over recent months and years in the issue of women's aliyot. And without getting into that whole debate now, we talked a little bit about this when we talked about other halakhic issues. Can you make the following argument? Some want to make it, which is as follows. Why are women not called up to an aliyah, the Torah, on shul, in shul on Shabbat, or during the week? Says the Gemara, in principle they do count towards the number of aliyot, but we don't call up women to aliyah, the Torah, because of kavod HaTzibur. Without getting into the whole definition of what is kavod HaTzibur. So can you make an argument that kavod HaBriot now overrides kavod HaTzibur? Meaning, are there women who are so offended, so publicly humiliated at the idea of not being called up to an aliyah just because they're a woman, that that becomes an argument of kavod HaBriot and would override the rabbinic prohibition of kavod HaTzibur of calling up the woman to the Torah? This is an interesting question. All of the senior poskim of today's world have said, no, that argument doesn't run. But it's interesting to be aware of the arguments. For example, it comes up, there is a case of the Maharam of Rottenburg. The Maharam of Rottenburg, who lived in the 13th century, he asked the following interesting shaila. What happens if you have a shul entirely of Kohanim? Who do you call up? So, who do you call up first? Well, that's easy. A Kohen. There's lots of them. So who do you call up second? So you never call up a different Kohen second. What happens if there's no Levi? Who do you call up? The same fellow. You call the same fellow again. But who do you call up third? because there's no Levian and there's no Yisraelim. And the only option is to call up another Kohen. Well, you can't call up another Kohen, says the Maharam, because then it looks as though you're questioning the Yichus of the first Kohen. And you never call a Kohen after a Kohen. So you're stuck. Who'd you call up? So what does he say?
Same guy.
No, you can't call up the same guy three times. A woman. Says the Maharam of Rottenberg. You ask a woman to come in from the Ezra Hashim, and you call up a woman. Now, I'm not here to drop halachic bombshells, but you can look at that Maharam of Rottenberg. It's brought down in the Beis Yosef, etc. Now, that doesn't mean that that's the halacha lemaisa. I'm not certainly not saying that, but the Maharam of Rottenberg is balancing the covered half tzibur angle and the covered half riyas for the Kohen being, you know, having another Kohen called up afterwards, and these issues are becoming relevant in that way. So on the women's aliyot issue, I think clearly today's postgame, if you remember my last year, I said that at the end of the day, these halachic innovation issues are subject to, ultimately, the decisions of the postgame, the senior postgame of the generation, and they decided at the moment that this is not an argument that runs. But you should be aware, covered abrius comes into this as an argument that is made as well. Let's go on a little bit and look at some final issues. Yes, you called her for Maxi, but we haven't even got to Maxi. We're still at number three. Fine. Now, let's just wrap up in the last 5 or 6 minutes with a few fascinating questions. What are the philosophical issues going on here? Why should it be that a rabbinic mitzvah is set aside for Kavod HaTzibur? What? A couple of Kavod, excuse me. Why would it be? So with rabbinic mitzvahs, you can make a fairly clear argument. Look at number 16 for a second. Rashi, there on the Gemara, brings the following. He says, Rabbonon achlu li lapru. It's mechila. They were moichel on their kavod. They introduced a new prohibition, and they said, look, in the case of kavod abrius, we are moichel, we would rather kavod abrius featured than the prohibition. La'avor al dibriyem, heicha de'ikha kavod abrius. In a case where there's kavod abrius, Chazal said, okay, we made the prohibition, we can tell you where it applies. In this situation, it doesn't apply. Kagai in the tilt of the Shabbos, and he brings the cases of carrying mukhs on Shabbos. So with the rabbinic mitzvah, it's not so complicated. The rabbis, if they create the Aveira, they can create the framework for which it will be allowed. But what about a Torah mitzvah? Where did that idea come from, that you can breach a positive Torah mitzvah for Kavod Abrius? Is that Kodesh Baruch Hu Moichel on his Kavod? How does that work? Is that possible? How does that work? So look at source number 17, very interesting. Rabbi Yosef Amar, Afilu harash shemachal akvoida kvoida mochel. Is a Rav allowed to be moichel on his kavod? So he says, yes, a Rav is allowed to be moichel on his kavod. Shnei Amar, Hashem hoylich ibnehem yomam. That a Kodesh Baruch Hu went before them, in front of them, on a daily basis, in the cloud, and in the fire, etc. A Kodesh Baruch Hu, alma dileihu. A Kodesh Baruch Hu, the whole world belongs, alma dileihu, the whole world belongs to him. V'torah dileihu, and the whole Torah belongs to him, machal eliyahu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says this source is moichel on his own kavod for Klal Yisrael's kavod, and therefore you see that this idea of kavod abrius is applicable even in the idea of a Torah mitzvah. And the question is, in the last analysis, let's look at why that might be. Where did it come from? Where did Chazal know this from? They treat it as axiomatic. Kavod abrius, human dignity, in all of these examples that we've given, is so axiomatic to the halachic process that it overrides rabbinic prohibitions and Torah prohibitions and all mitzvahs in certain cases. Where do they know that from? So I want to suggest to you in the last few minutes three or four potential makoros, because in the Gemara it just gives it as a given. Where would they know it from? First of all, it's implicit in the idea of Tzelem Elokim, like I said before. Look at number 18. Ben Adai says the following. Zeh Sefer Toldos Adam. This, when it says this is the book of mankind's creation in Bereishis, so Rabbi Ben Adai says this is a fundamental principle in the Torah. Rabbi Akiva says, "V'ahavtala reyecha kamocha." Zeklal gadol b'Torah. Shelot tamar, a person should never say, "Hayel v'nisbadeisi." Since I have allowed myself to become disgraced, he's bad lechaverim. Let other people be disgraced with me. If I don't mind, why should I care about them? Hayel v'nitkalauti. Since I have become abused or cursed in some way, if Kalel Chaveri me, let other people as well. I'm not bothered, I don't care. So why should I care for them? Amar Rav Tanchuma, im asita kein, if you act in that way, da'la mi atama vazeh. No, if you insult or you humiliate another human being, who are you humiliating? B'dumus Elokim asa'atot. Meaning, the idea of of HaKadosh Baruch Hu creating human beings in the Tzelem Elokim, this obviously is not a physical idea. This is a fundamental spiritual reality that we represent in so many ways, a spark of the divine in this world, to cause insult or indignity to a human being. Okay, Ein Eitzah Ve'Ein Chochmah Ve'Ein Tzfunah Ve'Ein Eitzah Ve'Ein Hashem. You can't just rationalize away a Torah mitzvah. But where Kavod Habriyah applies as a halachic meta principle, it has to apply. They said that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, I was at the Levi, I'm sure many of you were at the Levi as well. One of the things, I found it one of the most productive 3 hours I've spent in the last, I don't know how many years, standing in the Levi, listening to the Hespedim. It was like a 3 hour Musa Shir on the, it was just phenomenal. One of the things they said is Rav Aaron never gave a heter. Never gave a heter. Really? He said all sorts of interesting leniencies in different areas. He says, no. He never gave a heter. Because if it was allowed, it wasn't a heter. Meaning, okay, maybe you can get away with it. It'll be all right. If it was allowed, it was the right thing to do. It was not just allowed, but it was obligatory. Kavod HaBriyah is not just a heter. Okay, in these situations, it's absolutely mandatory. Because failing to apply that heter, failing to apply the principle, it undermines this idea that God who covered Abrias because of the Tzelem Elokim. Look at another interesting source in number 990. Keep noit ishor osa. If a person steals an ox or a sheep, utzvacho, and then they shecht it, or mocharo, or they sell it, chamisha bakar yishalein tachacho. If they stole a cow, they pay back 5 times. The arbatzoin tachacho. But if they stole a sheep, they only pay back 4 times. Why? Why do you pay back more for a cow? And you can't say because it's worth more, because that will be reflected in the value of the cow. So why do you pay back more for a cow? Look at what the Gemara says in 20. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says the following. Bore'e, come and see. Kama God will cover the bris. How critical and fundamental is cover the bris? Sure, Shehalach Baraglav, the shore when he stole, this Ghana, when he stole the shore, so he schleps it and it followed after him. But Sasha Hukima Aksay. But the sheep that he had to put the indignity to the Nebuch, the Ganav, of schlepping the sheep on his shoulders, Arba, he has to pay less. Why? Because he's already paid a little bit because of his personal indignity. We're bothered for the personal indignity of a Ganav? Yes. Yes, we are. Just like we're bothered for the personal indignity of someone who was liable to the death penalty. Where do we learn the obligation in the Torah to bury a dead person with covenant with dignity? We learn it from somebody who was killed by the Beis Din and whose body was strung up for the day, and it says you do not allow that body to remain hanging from the tree overnight. Even such a person who you might have thought, well, if anyone deserved it, they deserved it? Absolutely not. God will cover the bris. A person is made the Tzelem Elokim, and this Ghana is a source for cover the bris. There's also Imitashi of Day, the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Choshesh, he's worried for Kavod HaBriyah with Adam and Chava. He doesn't want them to be naked, said, but how do I know how to be acting in the world ethically? I follow, I copy the Halachta B'drachav, the mitzvah Bein Adam HaChaveru coming from, copying how HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to people in the world. But finally, I want to leave you with a thought by Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz asked a beautiful question in Sichas Musa. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Moshe Rabbeinu and says to him, I want you to be the goyim. You are the one who is going to lead Klal Yisrael out of Egypt. And of course, Moshe Rabbeinu responds, no, I'm not going to do it. And he goes through all sorts of arguments. And his last argument is, I can't do it when I have an older brother, Aaron. Aaron is going to be offended, so I can't do it. To which Hashem replies, don't worry, because I know Aaron, and he's not offended. He's happy. Some of believe. He's happy. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz asks an interesting question. One second. Do you mean to tell me that if Aaron wasn't happy, this would be a good argument? That because Moshe is worried about the sensitivity to his older brother's feelings, that the entire process of Geula, the entire Yetzias Mizraim is going to go on hold because Moshe's older brother is going to get offended? And Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, yes, actually. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's answer to Moshe Rabbeinu says, God will call it Abrias. Because I'm telling you, Moshe, that Aaron will not be offended. Because if indeed he would have been offended, you'd have been right. And you would not have been the Goel. And we could not have had you too. Jesus trying through you, because God will cover the Abrias, Shadoch the Loisa Sashiva Torah. The Kavod HaBriyah is such a fundamental principle that even the Geula of Yetzias Mitzrayim would have been put on hold. Which underlines the gentleman's question, the point over there, which is in these days where we daven for Geula and we we hope that the tariffs will be worthy of redemption. It's very clear, but one of the most fundamental ways that Chazal are pointing to lead to that redemption is through a recognition of Kavod HaBriyos, of Tzelem Elokim, especially at this time of year. Hopefully through that we will be able to rise higher in a very meaningful way and understand the depth of this idea in the Torah. Thank you very much.
Practice,